Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I'm just going to do what I think will probably be a short episode, but who knows, on three tips for reducing flares and crashes around your menstrual cycle. Now, many menstruating women who also have some sort of chronic illness experience, whether that is chronic fatigue syndrome or long COVID or some sort of autoimmune condition or fibromyalgia, often experience a change in symptoms around their menstrual cycle. And this could be a flare in symptoms. So symptoms heighten and get a little bit worse around their menstrual cycle, or could be more extreme energy crashes where they just completely relapse or significantly relapse during specific times of the cycle. One of the reasons for this is because people who experience chronic illness usually have unstable physiology. And this is something that I have spoken about on the podcast before, this idea of instability. The body, in its attempt to cope and continue to survive through years and years of chronic stress and other destabilizing physiological challenges, develops a sense of balance in its imbalance. And in doing so, the system becomes very unstable and very sensitive. And this means that even small changes can feel like a big deal to an unstable system. And sometimes those small changes or destabilizing factors come from the external world, an emotional stress, a little bit too much physical activity, change in your diet, something happening at home, a bad night's sleep. Any of these things can be externally destabilizing. But we can also become destabilized internally from our hormonal landscape. And this is much more likely to be the case if you're a woman with a menstrual cycle, where you are experiencing hormonal fluctuations across the month. And if you're a woman going through perimenopause, where perhaps those hormonal fluctuations are a little bit more erratic, that can also be the case. Men obviously do have hormonal systems, but their systems tend to be a little bit more stable. And obviously, if you are post-menopause, if you're on hormone replacement therapy, which is essentially stabilizing for you, this may be less of an issue. So I'm going to focus really just around menstruation, which is when we will experience a decrease in specific hormones, estrogen and progesterone. Estrogen and progesterone drop off at the end of the menstrual cycle, which means they're at their lowest point just prior to menstruation and within the first few days of the cycle. So one of the reasons why people can feel worse around this part of the cycle is because of these hormones, which have come from a certain level to their lowest level. There's a drop off, there's a fluctuation. And these hormones, estrogen and progesterone, they're actually really important for mitochondrial function. They can modulate inflammation in the body as a whole, and they can modulate inflammation in the brain. So if there are any neuroinflammatory symptoms, these can be exacerbated when hormonal levels are low. So one of the reasons why people with chronic illness may experience more symptoms or flares or crashes around their menstrual cycle is because of the low levels of these hormones. And I know in my own journey with chronic fatigue, this would be the time of my cycle when I would feel my worst. And then once I ovulated and I had lovely progesterone in my system, I would always feel a lot better. However, there are other parts of the cycle where other things can go wrong. And this is something that I've talked a little bit more about in some previous episodes, specifically episodes 35, 36, and 37, where I talk about how to have better periods generally with CFSME. For this podcast specifically, I'm just focusing on those specific end of the cycle, beginning of the menstrual cycle crashes and some of the mechanisms involved. And the first is that which I've already mentioned, which is that there is just this drop in hormones at this part of the cycle, which can be a cause of lower levels of energy, more inflammation is coming to the surface, perhaps more neuroinflammation is coming to the surface. So as we're working on our health generally, we're working on mitochondrial function, we're working on systemic inflammation, we're working on neuroinflammation. And as health improves generally across the board, we start to feel better and better at this low hormone time of the cycle, but there still may be some fluctuations across the cycle, because it's not necessarily normal for women to feel completely the same at every single part of their cycle. But the overall baseline should change as your health changes, provided that there's not other things going on which are complicating the picture, which very often is the case, unfortunately, in chronic illness. So we have this situation where hormones are dropping from higher to lower. And then if you're a woman who is predisposed to something known as estrogen dominance, which means that you have higher levels of circulating estrogen, or you have higher levels of estrogen relative to progesterone, then that drop from high to low is even bigger. So what I'm essentially saying is that if you're a woman who's predisposed to estrogen dominance, then that destabilizing impact of your hormones fluctuating at the end of the cycle could potentially be even more so destabilizing for you than somebody who isn't estrogen dominant. That's for somebody who has normal levels of estrogen and normal levels of progesterone. So we first of all got the fact that these hormones are just dropping from high to low and then lower at this part of the cycle. But then we've also got that there can be this additional challenge where if estrogen is very high and then drops to low, we feel it so much more because we're feeling the contrast. And that contrast is what creates further instability. Then the final piece of the puzzle, which I feel it's important to touch on here, is thinking about our output. And very often in the chronic illness space, there's an emphasis on maintaining and stabilizing ourselves at a baseline. And obviously, I talk about the importance of stability all the time and the importance of stabilizing systems in chronic illness. And we should have stable movement routines and stable sleep routines and stable blood sugar, stable light-dark cycles. You know, we need to stabilize our systems. But for women, we can't maintain the same level of output across a whole cycle. Maybe that's something that a man would be able to do, but for a woman, we need to adjust for our menstrual cycle. And therefore, if we have a particular baseline that works at one part of the cycle, it might not be the same at another part of the cycle. And if you are somebody who is cycle sensitive and you experience fluctuations in symptoms and energy in this beginning part of the cycle around menstruation, then you may need to also adjust your baseline in the days running up to your menstrual cycle and maybe the first few days of your menstrual cycle as well. So those are the three mechanisms involved. Those are the three things that I wanted to touch on today, which is number one, we are operating from a lower level of hormones during menstruation. We are potentially experiencing a bigger destabilizing impact if we are somebody who is more estrogen dominant. And then three, we may be increasing our output relative to our capacity if we are trying to maintain a consistent baseline the whole way through the menstrual cycle. So what are the solutions? It's all very well to understand that these mechanisms are at play, but obviously we want to make your cycles easier. We want to mitigate the amount of intensity of symptom flares that you experience. You may still experience some symptom flares because you will feel different at different parts of your cycle. But we want to make sure that the fluctuations are not as great, so that you are experiencing less symptom fluctuations and hopefully less energy crashes, more stable energy, more stability across your menstrual cycle. So what are the three things that you can think about doing? Well, the first thing, and this is something that I personally do, is to increase your consumption of phytoestrogen-rich foods towards the end of your menstrual cycle. And this is designed to compensate for the drop-off in hormones. So what are phytoestrogen-rich foods? Phytoestrogen-rich foods are foods which contain phytoestrogens, which are plant-based estrogens that look like estrogen to the body. They'll bind to estrogen receptor sites, but not at the same strength as your body's own estrogen. So they can have a weak estrogenic effect on the body. My top picks would be soy, if you tolerate it. Not everyone does, especially people who have autoimmune conditions. Flaxseed could be an alternative choice to soy, sesame seed, and also fennel, celery, garlic, and onions. So personally, in my own health journey, I would have very, very bad symptoms around my menstrual cycle. I would feel very low in energy. I would feel much more brain foggy. I would get energy crashes. At my worst, I would get menstrual migraines. And I would get a lot of headaches just generally and just overall just feeling more tired, more achy, more low, more hopeless. And then as my cycle continued, it would just pass. And then I would almost feel like, I'm never going to feel that way again. I feel so amazing. And then the next cycle would come and then I would be horribly disappointed again. And so what I learned was if I had 50 grams of edamame beans, bearing in mind this is soy, and I started to do that around day 21 of my cycle, this is for a 28-day cycle, and then 7 days into the new cycle, so I would do it from day 21 to 28 of the old cycle, day 1 to day 7 of the new cycle, that would be really helpful in terms of creating a little bit more stability in my body. You might not have to do it for the full 7 days, but 7 days I like to choose just in case the cycle is short for whatever reason, then you at least know that you've got enough of those phytoestrogens in your body prior to the new cycle starting. But even doing it 3 or 4 days before the start of your cycle, if you do have very regular and consistent cycles, may be enough. The other thing you can do is throw things like flaxseed and sesame seeds into smoothies if that's something that you're eating. Not a lot of our clients eat smoothies just because of blood sugar issues, but I do a lot of baking with flaxseed. I make flaxseed muffins and I put flaxseed into keto bread and things like that. So those are alternative ways you can also get the flaxseed into your diet if you don't do things like smoothies. The fennel, celery, garlic, and onions may have a weaker effect, but those are quite easy just to add into your food just day to day. But maybe particularly emphasizing those foods, provided you tolerate them towards the end of your cycle. And then the next thing to consider is more for those people who are prone to estrogen dominance. So estrogen dominance is either higher than normal circulating levels of estrogen, or high levels of estrogen relative to progesterone. And there can be many reasons why somebody would be prone to estrogen dominance. There can be genetic reasons, but there can also be other things that drive the estrogen dominance, especially in those people who are perhaps genetically predisposed. I'm somebody who is genetically predisposed to estrogen dominance, so this is something that I know I have to stay on top of. And one of the things is the obvious stuff that I probably talk about all the time on this podcast, which is regulating your blood sugar, because insulin highs and lows are going to impact your hormonal balance. If you're somebody who has mast cell activation syndrome or you have issues with histamine, keep in mind that histamine can create a series of biochemical changes in the body, which can increase estrogen. So we do need to get on top of histamine issues as well. And it's kind of like a vicious cycle because estrogen increases histamine, histamine increases estrogen. So we need to reduce the histamine load and also reduce the estrogen load, just break that cycle. We can also get exposed to chemicals that look like estrogen to the body. So where I spoke about the phytoestrogens, which are weak estrogens we maybe get from food, we can get very, very strong estrogens from chemicals. And these chemicals can be in our beauty care products, makeup we wear, the moisturizer we put on our skin, what we wash our hair with, the sun cream we use. Any kind of chemical beauty products will potentially have these xenoestrogens, which can increase estrogen dominance in the body. So you want to be really mindful of using a lot of natural skincare products that don't have things like parabens in them, don't have things like phthalates in them, which can be estrogen mimicking. Then we also want to think about clearance. Estrogen being a hormone needs to get cleared from the body. So if there's any other toxic load interfering with liver function, like mold, for example, or thyroid issues, that can impact estrogen clearance. If there's an issue with the gallbladder, that can increase estrogen clearance, or that can influence estrogen clearance. If there's nutritional deficiencies, that can impact liver function. If there's blood sugar imbalances, that can impact liver function. So we want to make sure that the liver, the gallbladder, the gut are all working really well to support the clearance of estrogen from the body. And then we also have specific pathways which are genetically influenced. We've got phase one detoxification of estrogen, and we've got phase two detoxification of estrogen. And what happens is phase one needs to work really well, then phase two needs to work really well, and then we need our digestive health to work really well so we can then clear whatever was created through the phase two detoxification from the body. So when we support estrogen clearance, we start with the gut, which also means maybe a little bit of work on the gallbladder to help get any estrogen or any toxins that are being processed by the liver out of the body. So once the gut is working really well and there's regular bowel movements happening, then we want to think about phase two estrogen detoxification. And this is where some people can have genetic predispositions that slow this down, and they can really benefit from extra magnesium, extra vitamin B6 can be helpful for this pathway. And then we can then work on optimizing the phase one estrogen clearance. And this is where foods like broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, flaxseed, soy can all help with that estrogen clearance. There are also supplements that you can take, some of the most popular ones being diindolyl methane, which is the active component in a lot of our brassica vegetables, which is why we want to make sure we're eating things like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, although those are often difficult for some people's guts to tolerate. And then we also want to think about the things that could potentially be sending estrogen in the wrong direction, down the wrong unhelpful pathways. And that could be pro-inflammatory foods, drinking alcohol, certain medications, blood sugar imbalances, which will all impact those detoxification pathways. So if you are somebody who's prone to estrogen dominance, this can take a bit of time to work out what the things you need to do are to support that estrogen clearance. Testing can be really helpful. So the Dutch Comprehensive Hormones Test can test phase one and phase two estrogen clearance pathways. And then you know, okay, this one's working well, this one's working sluggishly. These are the nutrients which support this pathway. These are the nutrients which support that pathway. And then you can tailor your estrogen clearance according to the test results, and then always retest further down the line to see if what you've done has helped. But then additionally, because we also clear toxins via the gut, it's one of our biggest drainage pathways. Something like a stool test can also be helpful if we need to work on digestive health as part of this estrogen dominance, as part of the picture of our overall health. So working on estrogen dominance is just one piece of a very complex puzzle when it comes to chronic illness. And so here again, I just want to reiterate that even though we have these ups and downs, if you're a woman with your cycle, the ups and downs do even out as your overall health evens out. So you might be thinking, I've got all these other things going on with my health, and now I need a hormones test, and now I need a stool test, and now I need to work on estrogen dominance. Just also trust that some of the other things that you're doing are supporting this anyway. as part of your health or fatigue recovery journey, you may already be working on blood sugar. You may already be working on histamine. You may already be working on the liver. You may already be addressing things in your gut. We can't do everything at once, but often the things that we are doing are having multiple impacts across lots of different pathways. And so therefore we want to work through things in a systemized way. But this information today about estrogen dominance might be just the thing that you really need to do to move the needle forward. If you feel like you've done so much of the other work, but you're still getting these big cyclical crashes, then maybe this is an opportunity for you to think about this as the next step in your journey. But just remembering that there are many steps and we can't do everything at once. So we've talked already about taking the phytoestrogens towards the end of the old cycle, beginning of the new cycle, just to raise hormonal levels or to buffer against the drop in hormonal levels with the phytoestrogens. We've talked about addressing estrogen dominance. And then the final thing to mention here is what I've already alluded to about pacing. We may just need to surrender and slow down more at the end of the cycle. And I would recommend that people pare back on their mental, physical, and emotional activities 1 to 3 days before their new cycle begins, and then 1 to 3 days into their new cycle. And exactly what that looks like is going to really depend on you and your case. Some people may just need to have an easier day the day before and an easier day the day they start bleeding. And then that's enough for them because their system already has enough inherent stability and resilience to cope. But if you are somebody who's having big fluctuations, big crashes, big changes in energy, big changes in mood, big changes in symptoms, you're probably going to need more support and longer duration of support, which might mean that you need to start winding down at that 3-day point to really start to pull back on your activities and obligations and cocoon yourself a little bit more, add in more self-care, add in more gentleness, add in more slowness, add in more edamame beans if you tolerate them, and really be gentle and kind with yourself. And then once you start bleeding, to really honor the slowness that comes with that and to allow space just to have a little bit more quietness, have a little bit more stillness, have less commitments until you get over that the first at least 3 days of your cycle. Some people may even need more, and then start to ramp up again. And I've definitely noticed this trend in my own cycle, that even if I feel good, if I push through in the first 3 days of menstruation, it usually comes back to bite me later on. So it's better just to at least once give it a go, really plan to slow down 3 days before, 3 days into the new cycle, and then just see how that change supports you. Does it make a difference? Does it help you? Is it worth doing? Depending on where you are in your journey, you may have different levels of commitment and different obligations. As you get busier and busier and enter more and more into the world, it is really hard to slow down and take that time for yourself. But it's really worth doing because the rest of your cycle is really going to build on the stability that you've created at the beginning of your cycle. And that's how over time, you'll start to notice with every single cycle, if you can continue to honor this, you should feel that things get a little bit better, a little bit better, and a little bit better. But as with chronic illness, there is always nuance, there's always complexity, there's always lots of different things to think about and consider. So remember that today is just a little snapshot, just a little few tips if this is something that you're struggling with, but there may be other complex parts to your unique picture, which also need to be addressed. So that is all from me today. I hope you have enjoyed listening to this, and I'll see you in the next episode.